Nearly 40 defense think tank experts urged the Pentagon to consider a list of three major reforms. They agree that base closures, changes to the civilian workforce, and other changes would help national defense over the long term. Todd Harrison is Senior Fellow for Defense Studies at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. He coordinated this latest letter, and he joins me now with more. Todd, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
All right. So this is actually not the first time you have put together a kind of consensus among think tanks and sent it over to the Pentagon, correct?
It's not. We did something similar about 2 years ago, calling for the same reforms. And at that time, we had about two dozen scholars from about 10 or 11 different think tanks. But we got to talking amongst ourselves over the past several months, and we realized, you know, the consensus for these reforms is even stronger now. And we think we may actually have an opportunity to see some success here. So we pulled the group together again this year, and to be clear, I was part of the coordinating team, but folks like Mackenzie Eagland at AEI, Sean Brimley at CNAS, and Kath Hicks at CSIS, they really helped pull this whole group together. And this time we got over three dozen scholars from 15 different think tanks to sign on.
Yeah, I counted 38 in all, but you didn't quite get Winslow Wheeler on this one.
Well, you know, Winslow is starting to retire now from Pogo. So, maybe next time we can get him in.
Well, that makes the F-35 safe, maybe, if he's going to retire. Anyway, to get back to the letter here. Now, the last time it went to, it would have been Secretary Chuck Hagel. And what was the reception back then? And you also sent to several lawmakers. What kind of reception did you get back then?
Well, the reception from DOD back then was, you know, a lot of head nodding and, you know, yes, we agree. We know we need these reforms. Go talk to Congress. And the reception on the Hill last time was pretty cool. It was, hey, you know, we don't really want to talk about these things. You're talking about politically difficult things that we aren't willing to touch. And a lot has changed in the past 2 years. Things that they weren't willing to talk about before, they are talking about now. You look at military compensation reform 2 years ago. They said, hey, we just created this commission. They're going to go off and study it. We're not going to talk about it until the commission gets back.
All right, well, so now, yeah, go ahead.
Well, the commission came back. and now what we see in the House Armed Services Committee is they're looking at implementing the retirement change that the commission recommended. So that's a big step forward in military compensation reform. You look at the DOD civilian workforce reform that we recommended last time. No one wanted to touch it. This time in the chairman's mark on the House Armed Services Committee's NDAA bill, it actually includes some pretty significant DOD civilian workforce reform where it would give DOD special authority if they want to do a reduction in force that they could make that reduction using performance of personnel as the number one priority. So you don't have to cut the new people you just brought in, the innovative thinkers, and by the way, the newer people with less tenure also tend to cost less. Those aren't the people you have to cut. DOD can use this special authority and they can cut the lowest performers from the workforce. So I think that will make it much more likely DOD will actually do a reduction in force in the future. The third area of reform is closing bases. I have to admit there's still a very cool reception to that on the Hill. But we are seeing glimmers of hope that members of Congress are starting to at least accept the idea that it needs to be studied and to task DOD or maybe GAO to go out and study whether or not we have excess basing capacity in the U.S.
All right, so let's talk a moment about the politics of this, not the right or wrongness, but just the politics of having it happen. Because if the Congress, as it's constituted now, pass laws enabling some of these things to happen, wouldn't it have to be on a fairly bipartisan basis to sustain a veto? And so I guess my follow-on question would be, what do you expect the White House reaction to be to these reforms?
You know, I would not expect any of these reforms to trigger a veto from the White House. In fact, you know, in the president's budget request, they have proposed reforms to military compensation, not the specific retirement change that the commission recommended, but they have proposed many other changes to military compensation reform for years now. They've proposed base closures in the budget request for several years now. The one that may be the closest to triggering a veto could be the DoD civilian workforce reform, but I don't even think, at least what the House is doing, I don't think would trigger a veto because it doesn't require the administration to do anything. It just gives them the option, and it only applies to DoD. So I don't think any of these things would necessarily rise to the level of a veto.
We're speaking with Todd Harrison. He's Senior Fellow for Defense Studies at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. And some of the statistics that you cite in the letter are pretty amazing, especially with the size of the civilian workforce and the contractor workforce that maybe people don't think about so much.
Right. I don't think people realize that we have almost 800,000 people in the DoD civilian workforce. And those are civilians who work directly for the Department of Defense all around the world. And to be clear, many of those people, you know, they don't all work in the Pentagon. The vast majority of them, I think probably 85-90% of them, work outside of Washington, D.C. They work all over the country and even around the world. And many of them are doing things like base maintenance, administrative tasks, doing depot maintenance for equipment, a lot of different things that they're doing.
And so if the BRAC were to happen and reduce the facilities, then they would probably go away hand in hand.
Well, that is the biggest way you can reduce the civilian workforce is by reducing the number of bases and facilities that have to be maintained. And that's where the biggest savings come from when you do a BRAC. It's not actually from closing the facilities. It's from being able to downsize your workforce that was needed to sustain those facilities. And keep in mind, we're looking at, you know, DoD has somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 25% more facilities in the U.S. than they actually need. And so that's a lot of excess inventory to have around.
And the other statistic in the letter is that the cost per active duty service member grew 76%. That's after inflation between 98 and 2014. How did that happen?
Well, there were a lot of different factors going on that contributed to that growth. The largest single area of growth within compensation was in healthcare. Healthcare costs more than doubled over that time period due to a lot of factors, some unique to the military, some not. But we also saw during that time period, Congress gave the military personnel pay raises higher than requested year after year. And so those pay raises compounded over time. And then, of course, retirement pay is based on your last 3 years of active duty pay. So retirement contributions went up as well to cover that. So there's a lot of different factors going on during that time period.
All right. So to wrap it up, I'm just curious as to the process you use to get all of these signatures from all of these different, some of the, and you actually have across the, not just, you've got across the political spectrum from the American Enterprise Institute all the way to the Center for American Progress, all signing on to this. How did you actually get this done?
Well, you know, I said before, the core group of us, you know, with Mackenzie Eaglin at AEI, Sean Brimley at CNAS, and Kath Hicks over at CSIS, the four of us basically divided up names and went around contacting people, asking them if they would be willing to sign. You know, it's a pretty pretty close community of scholars among defense think tanks. So we see each other regularly. We know each other. We have personal relationships. And that's where, you know, how we knew who to go ask and who was on board with the kind of reforms that we were talking about in the letter.
And will you have another four think tank presentation on the budget coming up soon on Capitol Hill?
Well, we are planning an event on the Hill for May 14th, where the think tanks that put this letter together are going to have an event on the Hill. It'll be open to the public, and we're going to have members of Congress come to speak at the event as well. So you'll be hearing more from us about this.
All right. If it's like last year's event, you're going to need more chairs.
Yeah, we got a bigger room this time.
All right. Todd Harrison is Senior Fellow for Defense Studies at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessment. As always, thanks so much for joining me.
All right. Thank you.